This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. In 2018, voters elected two Native American women to Congress for the first time. Now, President-elect Biden is set to be considering one of them, New Mexico Democrat Deb Haaland, for Secretary of the Interior. She would be the first indigenous cabinet member. Biden was swept into the White House in part by a wave of support from tribes across the country. Once he's there, can he deliver for Native Americans? Joining us now to talk about that and the record turnout across Indian country is Haaland's colleague, Democratic Representative Charisse Davids. She's a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, and she represents the 3rd District in Kansas, which is just southwest of Kansas City. Congresswoman Davids, welcome back to 1A.
Oh, thank you so much. It's good to be here.
Now, you were elected to Congress back in 2018 alongside Deb Haaland. What do you think about reports that she's being considered for a cabinet seat?
I think it's really exciting. I think that, even though Rep. Haaland and I were the first two Native women elected in 2018, you know, she has been just a fierce advocate and organizer in Indian country for a really long time. And, you know, she has worked with tribal governments and Native communities and has also worked with local administration at the state level and even at the federal level to help tribal communities. And I think she really understands the consequences of the federal administration and how that impacts Indian country.
How do you think this could change the relationship between the federal government and tribal nations?
You know, I think that one of the most exciting things that I saw during the course of the Biden-Harris campaign was that they were doing outreach and asking questions and trying to get more Native voices included so that when the Biden administration starts, that we'll see really active engagement, listening, and leadership when it comes to the federal government's relationship with tribal governments and Native communities. And I think Deb Haaland brings something to that conversation and to the table that we haven't seen before. Not only would it be historic for her to be the Secretary of Interior, it would also, I think, demonstrate that that the Biden administration is really actually showing up in the way that we saw the beginning of during his campaign for the presidency.
Well, 6 indigenous candidates won their congressional elections this month. That includes you. What does it mean to you to have more Native candidates elected to office?
It brings joy to my heart, I guess, is one of the things I would say. But having more Native folks in Congress is going to mean that the education of Native issues amongst our colleagues is going to be increased. There's 3 Democrats and 3 Republicans now as part of the Native American Caucus, and it's a demonstration, I think, of the diversity of tribal communities, and that, you know, there are, I look at it as a place where we can really see some bipartisanship going forward, which is something that I think a lot of people would really like to see.
We got this tweet from Freedom to Be, who asks, what are some of the difficulties that might be present during the attempt to undo Trump's damage to Native American rights and sovereignty? How many departments might have to work together?
You know, I think that one of the things that we're going to see with a Biden-Harris administration is a recognition of just how important the programs that the federal government has and the resources that the federal government needs to be, putting into different communities, Native communities, of course, but communities across the country. And it is absolutely imperative that the departments are working together and that the departments across the board are working with communities hand in hand to try to figure out what the most effective path forward is going to be, particularly when we're in the middle of a pandemic. This public health crisis has certainly demonstrated the need to work with communities, to work with our state and local governments to try to get this thing under control.
So the Biden administration starts on January 20th. When it comes to tribal nations, what would you like to see that administration focus on first?
Well, certainly figuring out ways to help Native communities address the pandemic is going to be, I mean, just so many tribal communities have been devastated. And I know a lot of communities have been, we've seen a lot of families lose a lot of loved ones because there's a lot of intergenerational families all living in one household. There are some kind of systemic barriers, things like access to clean water. We've seen a lot of tribal communities having to travel extensive distances to get access to some of the things that I think a lot of folks might consider basic baseline services. And I think that the first task when it comes to addressing the pandemic in tribal communities is going to be making sure that that some of those things are being addressed, and that, you know, the personal protective equipment, contact tracing, those kinds of things are just really robust. And in a lot of ways, that's not too dissimilar to what we need to see across the country. There are some baseline things that definitely need to be addressed.
And longer term, on the other side of the pandemic?
I'm really excited about some of the things that I think that the Biden-Harris administration is going to do. First of all, when it comes to infrastructure, we've heard President-elect Biden talk about looking to build back better. And in my view, when he talks about infrastructure, knowing that he's going to do things like bring back the Tribal Leaders Conference and hear directly from Native communities, I think that's going to translate into investments in infrastructure, in healthcare, in education, things that are going to really help our communities thrive going forward. And these are long-term needs, and absolutely knowing that the Biden administration is going to bring in Native voices to that conversation is, I think it's one of the most promising things that we've seen, because the current administration has not been doing that.
Later on, we'll be talking to a couple of activists who focused on getting Native voters to the polls this year. Some have said that President-elect Biden may not have won states like Arizona without them. How are you thinking about the future of Native American political engagement?
I absolutely agree that the grassroots, the community activism and engagement was a huge part of how we got to this place where, you know, states like Arizona and Wisconsin were, the Native turnout was phenomenal. You know, the future of of the Native voice and the Native vote in politics is, I've said this for a really long time, the impact of the Native vote on this election, the potential there can't be overstated. And it's because we know that for too long, the Native vote and the Native communities have been overlooked by politicians, by folks running for federal office, and in a lot of places, state offices. So by showing up, by listening, by engaging, I think that you know, the Native vote is going to continue to increase in importance. And we saw the beginnings of that, or maybe the medium-term effects of it, because it's been going on for a while now in this election. And I just think it's going to be that much more important going forward.
That's Democratic Congresswoman Charisse Davids of Kansas. Congresswoman, thanks for speaking with us.
Yeah, thanks for covering this. I appreciate you guys doing this story.
Up next, we'll talk to the activist behind the Ride to the Polls campaign on the Navajo Nation, which led voters to the ballot box on horseback. I'm Jen White. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR. Do you talk about the news with your friends? your family, or maybe perfect strangers. You can get all the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
On the next episode of Louder Than a Riot, what Bobby Shmurda's case reveals about how conspiracy laws are used against black and brown defendants.
A group of kids growing up in an oppressed neighborhood with no organization, making no money. It's not a gang.
Listen now to the podcast, Louder Than a Riot, from NPR Music.
I'm Jen White. This is 1A. Since the pandemic first began, Native American communities have been among the hardest hit in the country. But this election, we saw record Native turnout in battleground states like Arizona, despite the coronavirus. Now Native people and voting rights advocates are highlighting voters from the Navajo Nation who helped President-elect Joe Biden flip that state. And they say it's time for Indigenous people to have a seat at the table. Joining us to talk about Native voters in the 2020 election is Allie Young. She's co-founder of Protect the Sacred, an organization focusing on protecting Navajo culture. She is Diné, which means she's a citizen of the Navajo Nation. Allie, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Jordan James Harville. He's chief of staff at Vote America. That's a national nonpartisan group that worked with the Navajo Nation to register voters. He's Cherokee and Choctaw. Jordan, thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And we have Nick Martin, a staff writer at the New Republic covering Indian country, and he is Saponi tribal member. Nick, welcome to the show.
Appreciate y'all having me.
The trail ride was actually my dad's idea. My dad is a little bit old school and wasn't feeling particularly motivated to vote in this election. He had this vision of all of us riding because my dad is deeply connected to his horses.
When I'm united with my horse, you know, it's so awesome. It's just, you know, everything is beautiful.
We pulled this trail ride together today called Ride to the Polls because our Indigenous children, our Native children across the country, are feeling the urge to reconnect to our culture more than ever. And we thought this was a great way for them to feel inspired and motivated to vote in honor of our ancestors who rode longer miles to make their voices heard in voting at the polls.
Allie, you led a Get Out the Vote campaign on horseback across the Navajo Nation during Arizona's early voting period. Tell us what that was like.
Yeah, it was, it was incredible. I was very impressed by the turnout, and it was very emotional and spiritual as well, because, you know, I put my father and I put everything that he's taught me and every part of our culture into the trail rides. We had a couple of them, and it was for Diné people, horses and I think a lot of Native cultures as well, horses, we revere horses and we hold them in such high regard because of their spirit, which is of strength and resilience. And that's exactly the spirit that we wanted to be in tune with before we rode to the polls. We wanted to be refocused, recentered, and we wanted to return to balance as we rode 2 hours, 3 hours in our own homelands. And as we were reminded of what exactly we're fighting for and our ancestors who fought for our right to vote.
Jordan, you worked directly with Native tribes in Arizona to get people registered to vote. What were some of the biggest challenges with that?
Hi. Yes, the biggest challenges I think that we faced was truthfully the COVID crisis. Native tribes have been ravaged by the COVID crisis and kind of the lack of response to it. And so outreaching to them was incredibly difficult from the perspective of, their due to the COVID order, kind of the Navajo Nation was really forward-looking in that they went above and beyond the CDC guidelines in asking folks to not enter the reservation. And so trying to organize folks off of the reservation to come onto it wasn't possible like a normal year. And so Really what we needed to do was try to support the community that was there and prop them up and see what we could do to, you know, allow them to get each other to the polls. And so it was a really kind of inspiring thing to see.
Well, this election cycle, we saw a lot of voters turn to mail-in voting because of the pandemic. Nick, did Native voters do the same?
Yeah, so I think across the board, you saw like a lot of folks were trying to get Native voters, especially older voters who are obviously at higher risk of more serious effects from the coronavirus if they were to contract it. Now, a lot of that is complicated by the fact that I'm not trying to, speak broadly or create a monolith for Indian country, but for those communities that are, more rural, what you see is a kind of lack of access, both in terms of just general mail services, as well as the ability to then vote by mail. So I know that there are a lot of groups working to kind of, fix that. And as well, I know Protect the Sacred has worked on this Rural Utah Project, Four Directions. Everybody is kind of, in terms of these voter turnout efforts, they have definitely tried to, do what they can to help people vote by mail as much as possible in this election.
Now, Jordan, your group is focused on turning out the vote, your nonpartisan group. What do you think drove the turnout by Native Americans this year, regardless of how they voted?
I think that we're seeing, this is kind of the continuum of a decades long kind of campaign internally in tribal nations, as well as kind of supported by outside groups for Native voters to turn out. And so I think that what we're going to see is this is going to continue. Groups like Allies have sprung up, I think, in response to the COVID crisis, and hopefully will stay long term. These are the groups that are really doing the work and have been for decades. I think the COVID crisis maybe provided an opportunity to really be a catalyst for Native turnout. But I think what we're seeing is this is on the back of decades of work in tribal communities to engage voters, to break down barriers to voter suppression, and to build the kind of political power that we'd like to get folks to the polls.
Allie, as you talk to people during your efforts, what were some of the maybe concerns or issues people brought up when it came to being politically engaged? Were they hesitant, or did they have concerns or feel like they weren't part of the process?
With Native youth, certainly they felt there was a resistance to voting, and that's why I needed to come up with something that really inspired them, that was connected to culture, because our Native youth are they're wanting to reconnect to our languages and our cultures more than ever. But what I was hearing on the ground was that our Native youth, and they're more educated than ever, and that's where this resistance comes from, is that they know our history, better than we've ever known. And so their kind of thinking and their mindset is, why continue participating in this colonial system that has never worked for us? And something that I completely understand, but it's not the time. Like, we needed to get out to vote. The other thing was, of course, COVID-19 and how the current administration delayed funding to tribal communities and also didn't even want to include us in the initial stimulus package. So that is something that our communities are facing, in present day. And we want an administration that cares about us and that wants to include us.
Well, Irene emails, I know that President-elect Biden has expressed support for the bill recognizing the Lumbee tribe of North Carolina that recently passed the House. But how do you think the potential presence of Representative Holland in his cabinet will impact his involvement in the issue? Do you think it will come up during her possible confirmation hearings? How do you think it will impact the bill's likelihood of passing the Senate? Nick, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and I'm not sure that that specific question has actually ever been put to Representative Holland, just because in her role in the House the first 2 years, that has not been as public-facing of an issue as it became in the lead-up to the election. Now, I think what has to happen here is there's a lot of, in terms of federal recognition, there's a lot of politics at play, so that has to kind of be set aside for the moment to recognize that the Lumbee tribe does deserve recognition, and needs not just the federal support, but they deserve the ability to declare themselves and act as a sovereign nation. So now the question is, as that I think Irene put it in the email, the Biden administration promised it. Now, they didn't go to Robeson County in October, as Trump did, and he held a rally and made that a very central part of his campaign promise. But I think moving beyond these campaign promises, whether or not a Representative Holland sits atop the Interior or not, if that's going to be a really major one, I think, for Biden, regardless of if it's Holland at the Interior, that he has to kind of come through on. Now, he can't do that through executive action. It has to either be done through the BIA or it has to be done through a congressional act of legislation. The House passed a bill recently, I think last week, or this past week, I should say, that, you know, approved Lumbee recognition, but now we're going into this lame duck session, so we've got about 4 weeks left before the tribe, before Congress can get, or the Senate can pass it. So whether that happens or not is to be determined, but it's got to be a priority for the Biden administration, regardless of who's at the Interior.
We're discussing the impact of Native voters in the 2020 election with Nick Martin, a staff writer at The New Republic covering Indian country, Allie Young, co-founder of Protect the Sacred, an organization focusing on protecting Navajo culture, and Jordan James Harville. He's the chief of staff at Vote America. That's a nonpartisan group that worked with the Navajo Nation to register voters. I'm Jen White. We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment.
If you need a break from the news, Pop Culture Happy Hour now has you covered 5 days a week. We're here to help you find new TV shows, movies, music, books, and video games to keep you company in these difficult times. Listen now to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
This is 1A. I'm Jen White. Now let's get back to the impact of Native voters on the 2020 election with Allie Young, co-founder of Protect the Sacred. That's an organization focusing on protecting Navajo culture. Also with us, Jordan James Harville, chief of staff at Vote America, a nonpartisan group that worked with the Navajo Nation to register voters. And Nick Martin, he's a staff writer at The New Republic covering Indian country. We asked you how you're thinking about this election. Here's what Carly from Lancaster, Pennsylvania told us.
I'm a Native Hawaiian voter who voted in Pennsylvania, and this isn't the first time I'm voting in a general election. However, I felt that this was one of the most important elections to vote in. I know that neither candidate specifically caters or is interested in the Native Hawaiian vote specifically. However, I was drawn to hope that Biden would definitely vote for more Native peoples and take Native issues seriously, issues such as land encroachment and Native and tribal rights. I also hope that environmental protections will be taken more into consideration with Native peoples leading.
Thanks for that message, Carly. In an October visit to the Navajo Nation, President-elect Joe Biden encouraged tribal members to stay strong.
Vice President, can you say hi to the Navajo Nation?
Navajo Nation, stay strong. We need you. We need you. We need you. Need you. And you're going to have a seat at the table if we get elected.
All right. Thank you, Vice President.
We got this tweet from Laura, who says, Native people have been ignored for far too long. Hopefully Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will put significant effort into including Native voices and talent throughout their administration. Allie, as a citizen of the Navajo Nation, what would a seat at the table look like to you?
It would mean inviting us to conversations around climate change and, you know, environmental protection, because, you know, that same visit with President of the Navajo Nation, Jonathan Nez. He also talked to Kamala Harris and Vice President-elect Harris. And she said that she wants to work with Native people on climate change because we know the ways of honoring Mother Earth. And that, you know, was incredible to hear, because she's exactly right. And we have a lot to teach not only politicians, but, you know, the rest of the world about how we take care of Mother Earth, but also with the Violence Against Women Act and the inclusion of Native women and children, healthcare and education, all of these things that are very important to the infrastructure of tribal communities.
You know, there's a difference between having a seat at the table and getting to choose the menu. Are you at all concerned about getting token appreciation from the Democratic Party?
You know, I yes, because I never want that. For us, what I've learned in Navajo Nation around the COVID-19 work is that we did this together. We came together as a community to get ourselves out of this situation. We were able to flatten the curve. There was one day where we had zero reported cases, and that was because of the community and mutual aid. And so it's all of us doing this together, because, and that's how we've persevered and survived as a people.
Allie, what would it mean to you to have the first ever Indigenous person serve as Secretary of the Interior?
Yeah, well, Congresswoman Deb Haaland is one of my sheroes. I absolutely love her and am very inspired by her. And it would mean a lot. It would mean that the Biden-Harris administration is serious about what they said to tribal communities when they visited. And it would mean that, you know, it's time. It's time that, you know, we have representation in these very, you know, high-level political offices, and we have a lot to offer. So I think that it means that we're going to be in a better place, and this restoration that needs to happen in this country and healing will begin to happen.
Jordan, how do you think President-elect Biden can better include Native Americans in his administration? What steps would you like to see him take?
I think first and foremost, you know, he has the opportunity to appoint a member to the cabinet. And I think that that's first and foremost what he needs to do. I think beyond that, though, what would be important is to, you know, reinstate the Tribal Nations Conference, to ask agencies to begin consenting with tribes again, that stopped after the Obama administration. And I think further, starting to challenge some of the laws and the regulations that allow for so much voter suppression in Indian country, such as Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, you know, that removed preclearance requirements and stopped Congress from being able to stop states when they're implementing problematic voter suppression laws. And so I think, you know, repealing things like that and addressing kind of the core problems for Native turnout and for Native peoples, it will be essential.
Explain a little bit more about what the Tribal Nations Conference did.
It gives a seat at the table, right? It allows for government leaders to come and have some face-to-face interaction. I think first and foremost, when you look at Congress, what you see is that the majority of congressional members don't have a lot of interaction with tribal nations. And so they're not really familiar with the core issues at play here. And I think that that's first and foremost their responsibility. But I think the Tribal Nations Conference can go a long way in opening up those lines of communication.
Well, we got this tweet from Jade who says, not only should the Department of the Interior have a Native leader, shouldn't the Bureau of Indian Affairs be staffed entirely by Native people? Allie?
Yes. I'm over here nodding my head. Absolutely. Because, I mean, we should be. I mean, when we talk about tribal sovereignty, I always use, you know, quotes because, you know, we're not entirely sovereign. We still have a government-to-government relationship with the federal government. And so, yes, you know, as we inch towards, you know, better sovereignty for our nations, we should have Native peoples in those offices and in those positions.
Jordan, what kind of impact do you think that kind of shift would have if the Bureau of Indian Affairs was staffed by Native people?
I think that you would see the type of integration of you know, kind of policy into all tribal services. You'd also, again, open up another line of communication. I think, you know, Washington could really use more Native leaders around to kind of have the conversation about what Indian country needs and to put their issues at the forefront, right? I also think that imbuing things like, you know, voter registration throughout the agencies and things like that to increase voter registration rates and turnout, right? There's these types of opportunities that you can't get unless you have Native leadership at the forefront.
Now, Nick, in the lead up to the election, the Biden-Harris campaign released what they called a comprehensive plan for tribal nations. What can you tell us about the plan?
Yeah, so, I mean, just to give a little history around the plan, you know, going back, I think this was a really important election cycle because in the primaries this year, Julian Castro, I think it might have been July of 2019, he was the first, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong here, but he was among, and Bernie Sanders might have done so in the 2016 primaries, but Julian Castro released a fairly comprehensive Indian country platform. And that spurred, you know, plans by Senators Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren. And we didn't really get a Biden plan until I think it was spring of 2020. So he was among the last of the major candidates to release one. Now, he's since put together a team. They've released a program that broadly kind of speaks to infrastructure reform as well as taking on some of the environmental challenges. But I think the big thing here, and again, like to kind of go back to what we were talking about earlier, is that, you know, all these plans and campaign promises are really great, and we've heard them before. I think, and also just speaking to the issue of getting more representation in terms of the BIA or in the Interior, that's important, but you have to get the right people in those roles, regardless of if they're Native citizens or not. You have to get people who are actually going to be champions for tribal communities and not for external causes or self-promotion. And so I think that as, you know, the Biden administration kind of tries to bring its plan to fruition, it has to also, we have to continue to push it, because the plan is not enough. We've got to go further. It's got to, that means shutting down, you know, extractive industries around Chaco Canyon, at the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, shutting down Line 5, Line 3, Keystone XL, Dakota Access Pipelines. Like, there's a lot of work that has to be done very, very quickly that he can take immediate executive action on, as well as using his Senate connections to kind of push and prod the legislative chambers to you know, pass visions and forms of his plan.
Allie and Jordan, I'm curious for you both. What does accountability look like for you post-election? How do you plan to continue to put pressure on elected officials to stand by these promises? Jordan, I'll come to you first.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, what needs to happen is, you know, we need to stay engaged in Indian country. I think that Native voters across, this is not just let's turn out for this one election and show up here and we get to all go home. I think that, you know, by continuing to kind of show that power and attention to the promises that Joe Biden made, I think are going to be essential. And I think, you know, continue to call in to senatorial offices. You know, we have many elections coming up in the next few years. It doesn't just stop at the presidential. And so continuing to turn out and hold them accountable at the ballot box, I think that that's one of our most effective tools.
Allie, what about for you?
Yeah, accountability means selecting Deb Haaland and then also, you know, listening to our communities, because we're still being very much, you know, very hard hit by COVID-19. In Navajo Nation, we're seeing another surge. Our death toll is above 600. So coming to our communities, visiting with us, hearing our concerns. And yes, I agree with Jordan that we also, on our end, you know, this victory doesn't mean that we're finished. We have a lot of work to do, and starting with COVID, but onwards is continuing to participate and show up.
Jordan, if you have a message for elected officials, regardless of party, what would that message be?
Appoint a Native person to the cabinet.
Full stop.
Yes.
Allie, what about for you?
You know, I'm in total agreement. You know, appoint more Native people into these offices, because you have a lot to learn from us. I mean, especially when we're working with tribal communities, because, you know, a lot of people who hold these political offices don't even know the true history of this, of Native people in this country. So learn from us and appoint us.
Nick, as you continue your reporting, what will you be keeping track of?
I think right now I'm just kind of trying to do my best to keep track of indigenous movements to hold both state and federal nations accountable for their actions. So right now I'm actually out at the you know, Shinnecock Indian Nation's reservation as they continue to fight against the New York State's lawsuit against their ability to pursue economic development on their sovereign land. So, I mean, this is going to be a long battle. It's not over. And even if we get someone to top the Interior, we've got to still keep pushing. So that's it.
That's Nick Martin. He's a staff writer at the New Republic covering Indian country. Also with us, Allie Young, co-founder of Protect the Sacred, an organization focusing on protecting Navajo culture, and Jordan James Harville. He's chief of staff at Vote America, a nonpartisan group that worked with the Navajo Nation to register voters. Thanks to you all. Today's show was produced by Hector Arzade and Amanda Williams. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.